Good evening, and welcome to Representative Charlie Melanson's live telephone town hall conference call. My name is Robin, and I work for Representative Melanson in his Washington, D.C. office. I'm going to be your host tonight. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you will find this call informative and useful. Soon you'll be hearing from Congressman Melanson. First, I want to explain the format for tonight's call and how you can get in line to ask the Congressman a question. This call is being conducted in listen-only mode. In other words, you can hear me, but I can't hear you. This will allow everyone to hear the questions and Congressman Melanson's response. As this is a live question and answer session with Congressman Melanson, in a few minutes you will have the opportunity to speak to the Congressman directly. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 3 on your telephone keypad. That's star 3 on your telephone keypad. Then you will be transferred to one of our staff members who will ask your name and your question. Also, if you would like to simply leave a comment or have an issue that you need help with, you can also press star 3, and a member of our staff will assist you momentarily. We'll try to get through as many of your questions as possible tonight. To help us accomplish this goal, we must limit you to just one question. If your question is chosen, I will say your name and where you're from, and then you should repeat your question for Congressman Melanson. So again, if you have a question for the Congressman, please press star 3 on your phone, and a staff member will talk to you in just a minute. I also want to remind you that if you ever need to contact Congressman Melanson, you can call his office in New Iberia. The number for New Iberia is 337-367-8231. Also, please feel free to go to our website at www.melanson.house.gov for more information, and you can also sign up for our email newsletter. All right, everyone. For those just joining us, this is Congressman Charlie Melanson's telephone town hall meeting. We're going to begin in just a minute. If you have a question for the Congressman, please press star 3 on your phone, and we'll ask your question. So first, Congressman Melanson, would you like to offer a few comments?
Yeah, thanks. Hi, everybody. I hope the connections are clear. Peachy and I are in Washington, where we're wrapping up voting for the week, and we'll be hosting a group of Honor Air, which is veterans from World War II, that will be coming up to D.C. To go to the World War II Memorial. We'll take them to the Vietnam Memorial and then up for wreath laying at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. That's been one of the activities I've been doing over the last year or so, and one of the most rewarding to see these soldiers, particularly who are very high in age, and their response to seeing the memorial, which finally got built in their honor, and to go to the tomb for wreath laying. Here in Washington, while there's a lot of things that go on all the time, recently we passed an economic stimulus package. One of the things that was nice about it was when you see the leaders of this country, the House of Representatives, the senators, the president, put their differences aside and decide to work together, it's amazing what they can do and the things that they can do that are good. I'm pleased that Washington demonstrated this type of bipartisanship just recently to get this economic development stimulus package done. I hope they'll continue that into the future. There are going to be recovery rebates for the American people, and some of the points in there is that Louisiana will get an average rebate of $882 per household. There will be anyone earning $3,000 and has filed an income tax form for this year will be eligible, whether it's Social Security income, veterans disability income, survivor benefits, or disabled veterans benefits. Regardless, there will be eligibility, and we have been told by the IRS that the checks should be out by the June 1st of this year. There is a one-time tax child credit for every child in the household of $300. And the, in addition to the tax rebates of up to $600 per individual and $1,200 per family, the Act allows for this child tax credit. There's also some tax credits there for small businesses, which will allow the businesses to write off their taxes for capital investments. Instead of $125,000 limit, there will be $250,000 limit. And then also for small businesses that purchase new equipment, they'll be able to write off an additional 50% for the investments purchased in 2008 or bonus depreciation. And it was really, again, nice to see that our parties and our administration and the Congress working together to try and get something done. If anyone should have any questions about the stimulus package, if you've got a pen or a pencil, and I can save this also for the end too, the IRS has a website, which is www.irs.gov, or you can call the IRS at 1-800-829-1040. Although most of us don't care to talk to the IRS unless we have to, but if you would like information on that, please feel free to do that. That was one of the major pieces, so I thought I'd kind of run through that real quick in case there were any questions about the package, and then we can maybe open up for questions. I don't want to talk all night. I'd like to hear if there's any issues that are on people's mind and try and respond to them.
All right. Thank you, Congressman, for sharing that. For those of you just joining us tonight, welcome and thank you for participating. My name is Robin, and I'm going to be the host helping Congressman Melanson moderate his town hall tonight. If you have a question, don't forget you can just push *3 on your telephone, and we'll try to get to everyone's questions tonight. We have a lot of questions to get through, but we will hopefully try to get to you tonight. Again, that's *3 on your telephone. Okay, let's see. Our first caller is going to be Patricia Adams from Brobridge, and she has a question about illegal immigration. All right. Patricia, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Would you like to ask your question to the congressman?
Yes. Congressman, how do you feel about illegal immigration and the fact that Congress seems to be doing nothing about it? Now, I'm not against immigrants, but I'm against illegal immigrants, very much so.
Yeah, and I feel the same way. People who want to come to this country need to come to this country through the process. No matter how laborious it may seem, if they truly want to be citizens of this country, that's the way we would like them to get here. And that has been one of the hang-ups of trying to get consensus in the Congress, in the House, in the Senate, or with the White House, because it's a process of trying to find compromise and agreement, which has been difficult to come by. There's been proposals put forth, but even within the parties, there are different feelings about who should, who shouldn't. You've got H-2B issues, H-1A issues, which are types of people that are allowed to come in and work, seasonal for agriculture, seasonal for seasonal work. And so that there's just such a broad spectrum of disagreement, and they have not been able to pull it all together, because it's basically about getting enough votes to pass something. And while there are discussions ongoing in Washington on both sides of the Hill, they have not reached a resolution. I wish I could say that it was there. There are laws on the books. We have introduced some bills that we are trying to pass that provides for more stringent laws so that we can secure our borders, try and identify the people that are in here illegally and get them back to where they came from, particularly the criminal element that may have come across the border illegally. So it's a work in progress. I wish I could say it was a done thing and that we've got it all fixed. But as I said, it's a work in progress between the House, the Senate, and the President. And if nothing happens before this election cycle, which I don't anticipate, hopefully by the start of next year, we can move straight into trying to address it, because it is an issue we need to address.
All right. Just a reminder, if you have a question for the congressman, please press *3 on your phone, and we will try to get to your question tonight. All right. Our next question is from Sandra from Patterson. Sandra, are you on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, would you like to ask your question to the congressman?
Good evening, Congressman.
Hi, Sandra. How are you?
Yes, I'm a teacher in St. Mary Parish, and I would just like to know, do you think that the two bills that are the windfall, I don't have those bill numbers in front of me, but the ones that deal with the Social Security, do you think it's going to make it out of committee this time, and do you think it will come up for a vote in the House and in the Senate?
And I haven't had a discussion with the leadership on these specifically, and I'm looking to one of my staff people. I can tell you that I support trying to fix the problem. To tell you that we will have a bill before this election cycle, this is on Social Security for teachers. Yeah,
well,
I'm a co-sponsor of the bill, but it's in the retirement.
Yes.
Social Security, not which basically...
The windfall.
Right.
The windfall.
I'm a sponsor on those two bills. To tell you that we will have a bill in this cycle or this session, I don't think that we will. Part of the problem that we're running into in Washington is we are faced with, when I got here, a $9 trillion deficit. We're trying to stop the hemorrhaging, and as I tell people, we can't get out of the hole by digging more. We have to start stopping the wasted spending that's been going on in Washington and start trying to rebuild the surplus that was projected back some 7 years ago. That provides us with the financial wherewithal to address that and fill the gap because it takes dollars to fill it.
But I just think that whenever the policemen and the firemen and these other teachers really find out about this and everything else, they don't really care about
it affects
their families.
I can tell you that they know about it. I can tell you that I'm concerned about it, and I not only have constituents but very good friends that have the issue. That's why I'm signed on to the bills, and that's why I'm doing what I can to try and keep this on the front burner. And, of course, as I said, looking for the dollars to fill that funding need to take care of the problem that was created when this law was passed. And I think that the law adversely affects certain states because of the state laws and the way they're impacted. But I can assure you, it's on the front burners, and I am paying attention to it.
All right, caller, thank you for that question. Just a reminder, if you'd like to ask the congressman a question, press *3 on your phone. Okay, our next caller is David. I believe he's from Thibodeau. And David, do you have a question for the congressman?
Yes, David Gauthier, Charlie.
Hey,
how
David.
You doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Sharon's out, so she told me to kind of mention this to you. We're going to be going up to Washington April 22nd through the 25th with Equity and Inclusion Campaign with LDRF. And I was just wondering if you knew of any particular bills that would be hot and heavy to be talking to people about for support?
David, I probably would need to get a list of those things that are of concern to you. I'm looking to see that...
Well, any independent legislation that naturally will benefit the Gulf Coast communities.
We're looking at trying to get I-49 put through. We're trying to do housing bills. Which is not just a coastal area. We're concerned with this administration has come forward with, or at least the Corps of Engineers has come forward and wants to stop work on the Morgans of the Gulf and decertify
right.
South Lafourche. So we're trying to get those problems solved. We did a bill just recently or in the late fall that would provide for college students to reduce the interest rates on their loans, to provide for more Pell Grants so that more people that want to go to college, that can't afford to go to college, might have that opportunity. So I guess generally we're in levy protection. We're trying to resolve issues that were caused by the hurricanes with health care in the New Orleans region, which, of course, affects the eastern part of my district, St. Bernard, Plaquemines, St. Charles, and that area. And we're working on some housing bills for relief for the people that were affected by the hurricanes. We also have a bill that Senator Landrieu got an amendment on this past week in the Senate that would provide for the Road Home recipients who had claimed a casualty loss on their insurance and are now have to face paying income tax on the Road Home monies, which hinders their ability to rebuild their houses. We're trying to get that suspended so that they can go back in and not have to suffer that additional loss. It's kind of like a couple of years ago, a number of years ago, when the government did a stimulus package that after they gave the checks out, all of Americans found out they had to pay tax on the stimulus money, and that's kind of what's happened to the Road Home people, so we're trying to address that. So we have done a number of bills, and we have a lot of work ahead of us, and it's going to be a matter of getting the Congress. Of course, a lot of people are starting to campaign for re-election, so having people focused in here and trying to keep them working through the probably into October. And if you need some additional information, David, if you just call Chris at my office, he can probably give you a list of what else is out there.
All right, thank you for that. Our next caller is going to be Oscar from Crown Point. Just a reminder, everyone, press *3 on your phone, and you can ask a question to the congressman tonight. All right, Oscar, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, would you like to ask the congressman your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Hi, Oscar.
Hello, Congressman.
How are you?
I'm fine, sir. I live in your district in Crown Point, Louisiana.
Right.
Which is...
I know exactly where it is.
Barataria passes through.
Right.
And during Rita, Crown Point was flooded. And I had 4.5 feet of water under my place.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Corps of Engineers built the levee protection system, originally I believe it was planned to come and protect Crown Point. And for some reason they changed their mind and they cut it short. So it left Crown Point, Barataria, and Lafitte out of the levee protection area.
Correct.
And I had 4.5 feet of water, like I said, underneath my house doing Rita. Now they've built a dam by the Lapalco Bridge in the Harvey Canal, which is the same canal as Bayou Barataria. If we have another storm like Rita that sits out there and pumps the water like Rita did, and they shut that dam, it's just going to back the water up and flood the properties of the people that live along the bayou in Crown Point, Barataria, and Lafitte. And I just was wondering, sir, if you felt like it's just that we pay the same taxes as the people in the levee protection area, and we are left out on the outside. And since not only since Katrina and Rita, I've seen a lot of levee work being done on the protection areas that's protecting Morello and the upper areas away from Crown Point and on down, and but I don't see anything being done.
Oscar, yeah, and
this area.
I want to make sure that we try and get as many questions as we can tonight. I got appropriated in the supplemental appropriations, which is an emergency appropriations, that would, with the word authorization, that will provide for the Lafitte area levees, and they've started the construction. As to where the levees will be placed is not of my doing, but would be the West Jeff and the Corps of Engineers and for the alignments and where they go. The word are provided for $100 million for the Lafitte area. I know that they've supposedly started building some of those levees, but I would suggest that from a determination of where they're going to place those levees, that you talk to the West Jeff Levee Board. That is plans that were started long before I got here, and my job is to try and provide the dollars for those projects that have been those requests have been made prior to and since the storms. So if you check with them, yes, you deserve the protection I hope that you're included in it. But if you just communicate with the West Jeff people, and I think your area is represented. Is that Chris Roberts maybe in that area that represents you? I might be able to give you the information. Jeff Parish Council.
All right, thank you for that. And just a reminder, if you still have a question at the end of the call that we don't get to tonight, you'll have the opportunity to leave a message for the congressman, and someone from our office will try to call you back with an answer as soon as possible. Again, if you have a question for the congressman, please press star 3. Our next caller is from Franklin, Ore Rogers. Ore, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Oh. Hello, Ore.
Hey, Charlie. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing fine. And you?
I'm doing great.
Good. What can I...
Charlie, what I wanted to ask you about, as you know, that we, when I was with the Parish, president, we did some work together, and also with Billy Tozan, in order to try to get this I-49 completed through from Lafayette to New Orleans.
Right.
And at the time that we were working on it, we had a lot of commitments and promises through the federal government. It was going to take $1 billion to complete it from Lafayette all the way down to New Orleans. And never could get started funding on it, and it irritates some of us that's been heavily involved with that particular project and see that we're spending $12 billion every day in Iraq, and we didn't have the money to do that either, but they borrowed it and continually borrowing it for it. And wondered why, if y'all still, I heard you tell somebody a while ago that you are keeping up with that I-49 project.
Yes, we are. When I got into the Congress 3 years ago, we did a bill that's called TLU. Some of what was done, there was $30 million allocated, if I remember correctly, for the 3rd Congressional District. A number more dollars were awarded or put into the section to tie in Shreveport to the Arkansas border, because Arkansas was to the border, and that 20, 30-mile stretch of road or whatever the distance was needed to be complete. Once we get that Shreveport to the Arkansas state line, we will have the 4-lane that will take us all the way to the 310. Now, we haven't gotten everything to interstate status yet or criteria, but I've been working with Congressman Bustani and McCreary, and we've cooperatively been trying to push I-49 along as quickly as we can. In the last several years, as you're aware, some overpasses have been built. That's part of the monies that were appropriated, and those overpasses are being put in. One of the problems that we've got, and as you talked about the $1 billion for the cost of I-49, in the latest estimation, and they're working on the stretch from roughly DeSalamins to Boutte at 310, and that stretch alone, because of the wetlands issues and the alignment issues and the cost and how it'll have to be built, is going to be a $1 billion project when it's all said and done. So we're going to try, and what our discussions have been between the Charlie Bustani, Jim McCreary, who have parts of I-49, is to get this road moved as far as we can and to interstate status as far as we can, and then we will look to try and tackle that last segment. Because of the cost of it, it'll take us probably might take us almost as long as it took us to get the road from the state line down through Morgan City and over to Boutte or to the DeSalamins area. Hopefully it won't, but we're working on it, and hopefully we'll see it before we're gone from this earth.
All right, thank you. Just a reminder, press star 3 on your phone, and we'll try to get to your question tonight. Press star 3 if you have a question for the congressman. Next, we have Jody from Lockport, and she has a question about jobs. Jody, can you hear me?
Yes, it's Jody.
Okay, go right ahead.
Hi, Jody.
Jody.
Hi,
Jody.
Hi.
Hi.
Good evening, Congressman Millisaw.
How are you?
I'm Josie from LaFouche Parish, and it's a the economy. That's what concerns me. And the issue is jobs around here.
The irony is that the area in Terrebonne, Lafourche, and St. Mary, and that area probably has the lowest unemployment rate in the entire region. That may express why there's a scarcity of jobs. Usually when the high unemployment rate is because there's no jobs out there, but maybe because of the low unemployment rate, we've taken most of the jobs. But I hear employers, in the region talking about finding workers to fill their jobs. Now, to tell you which ones are out there, I couldn't tell you exactly. What I would suggest to you is if you haven't gone to the Department of Labor, I believe the State Department of Labor has an office in the Houma, right there in Houma, and go and put in a sign up there so that any jobs that are available, you would be notified and can go and apply for those jobs, and that would be my best suggestion. The stimulus package was about trying to put money into the economy to keep the economy strong, to stimulate it, and hopefully that will provide for some additional jobs. I don't know if that stimulus, the $150 billion that we've put into the economy, will keep it going, but hopefully it'll pick it up for a short period of time, create some new jobs, and hopefully those jobs will stay and we'll get the economy back on even keel.
Thank you for your question. And if anybody else has a question, press *3 on your phone. Okay, our next question is from Donald in Reserve. Donald, can you hear me?
Good evening, Charlie.
Hey, Donald, how are you?
I'm fine. Okay, my question was actually the second question that was asked to you tonight about the windfall elimination provision and its House Resolution 82. So you've already answered the question, but I'll just give you some information as to where the money can come from.
Okay.
The money comes from the money that was collected by the individuals affected, the same as those that are not affected by the windfall elimination provision. But apparently Congress has taken the Social Security money and used it for other projects.
Yes, and when I got here, I found that out. And one of the things, and you might remember political advertisement a couple of years back about taking the Social Security money and locking it up, locking that trust money up, and that is exactly what we need to do. We need to, this government needs to repay that money back into the trust fund. If we repay that money that's been robbed for Peter to pay Paul, then we need to pay it back with the interest. And then doing what's right by the teachers and the people that were on the state retirement systems who also earned credits for Social Security and aren't getting their fair share can then get what they rightfully deserve. But I appreciate and I agree with you. That's where the money should come from. It can come from. And hopefully we'll get this thing solved. I hope that we'll get it solved. If we don't finish it before this year's election cycle, I'm hoping that at the start of the next Congress, it will be one of the first things put up for the new Congress and the new president to address. It's a fairness issue for me.
All right, thank you for that. Our next question is about the price of gas. We have Clayton in Brobridge.
And hello, Clayton.
Hello, Congressman. I'm concerned about the price of gas. It keeps going up and up. Is there any way it could be stopped? I mean, can somebody control it?
Well, we've never had price fixing. The government allowed a price fix on gas. I wish I could give you a very simplistic answer to how to fix it, but I think the problem of fixing it has everything to do with the capacity of the refiners in this country to produce enough gasoline. There's obviously oil. Of course, we need to encourage the production of oil, whether it's offshore or onshore in the United States, so that we're not relying upon foreign countries as we are. We in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Texas, and the state of Alaska are the only five states in the entire United States that allows drilling off our coast. You know, you would, if it was on an equitable basis, we'd be making them pay the higher fuel cost and natural gas costs in other parts of the country. And because we're doing doing our share for American energy needs, we should get a break. But one of the things we did about a year and a half ago was we passed some bills to provide for encouragement of oil companies to add capacity to their refineries so that the volumes would increase, so the supplies would be more readily available, which is part of the element of supply and demand of bringing the price down. It takes a couple of years from the start of design to the completion of the project, but Marathon in Garyville is doubling its size. Valero is going to be, a one-third increase in its size. There's a put off the Motiva facility that I think is doubling, and others in line around the country that will be coming online over the next year or two or so. That doesn't do us any good right now. What's happening and the concern that I have, and that's why I think our economy is struggling so much, is the cost of food, the cost of gasoline, cost of health care. Those people that are below I-10, for the most part, their property insurance, and it's just starting to eat into the average working person's income, and it's getting to be a strain on everybody. I am attentive to it. I wish I could say I have an exact answer for it. I don't, but the Congress and the people that I work with closely are aware of the problem and are looking for some way to fix it. Truckers out there with diesel paying $4 a gallon, and as I've told some of these oil company people, I thought diesel fuel was a byproduct of gasoline. It's getting tough on farmers, shrimpers, anybody in business, and all the people that are out there that are trying to make ends meet with the rising cost of living going faster than their incomes. I will do my best. If you have any suggestions of what might be done, or if anybody on the phone has any suggestions, get them to me, and we will see if we can figure out some way to make things work to bring the price down.
All right, thank you for that question. Our next question is from Janet and Kate. Just a reminder, if anybody has a question, press *3 on your phone. All right, Janet has a question about illegal immigration. Janet, would you like to ask your question?
Yeah, first a couple statements. Thanks so much for hosting this. This is the second one I've attended, and it's really a nice forum.
Well, thank you.
So I appreciate that. My other statement is that I do agree that we need to do something about the drain of illegal immigrants on our economy, on our health system, on our education system, all of those things. But every time I hear something about illegal immigrants, it's always concerning Mexicans or Haitians or Cubans. And I'd like to know, what do we do about persons coming in from Eastern Bloc countries and from Asia? We don't seem to concentrate on them, and there is quite an influx of those people, but we seem to concentrate on the people of color, if you will.
Well, and I don't know the statistics on that, Janet. I do know that the labor force in South Louisiana and most of the Gulf Coast, and I'm hearing throughout the United States, is mostly of Hispanic descent. If there are Middle Eastern people coming in, they would have to come in either through Mexico or Canada, and I don't think they can readily cross the border anymore. The security should be tight enough, unless they're doing crossings like the people coming in from Mexico illegally. The borders are supposedly tightening up, where the government has said that they believe they have the most serious problems. They have put the manpower there. That happens to be along the southern borders, along the southwestern part of the United States. I have some friends that have moved to Vancouver, and they go back and forth to visit their the couple's, the wife's family that's in Washington State, and they say security is tight there. Now, that doesn't mean people can't cross the border where there aren't border crossings, but I think they're doing the best that they can with what we have, and securing the border shouldn't have anything to do with discrimination. I agree with that. We're looking to add resources to ICE and hope that they can clear up the backlog of enforcement laws and take care of cleaning up all of our immigration problems. But that's going to take a while, and it takes money and funding them and getting this country back on financial sound footing, which is causing an appreciation of the dollar. It's causing hardship on the people in this country, particularly the people that are working wage earners.
All right, thank you for that. Let's see. Our next question is from Jacoby in New Iberia, and he has a question about veterans benefits. Would you like to ask your question, Jacoby?
It's Perry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had the wrong name.
Yes,
go right ahead.
Congressman, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Okay. I'm a 100% disabled veteran, Vietnam
okay.
veteran. And I was kind of wondering when you all would be back in full operation, because when it was open, it was so easy on me to go get my medical care and my medicine and things I need. That guy was wrong with me. But I'm still getting taken care of, but I want to know when New Orleans will be open again.
Well, we're working to get New Orleans back up. There in New Orleans, the problem has everything to do with a dispute among some, not me, because I believe we ought to be putting up the LSU Medical Center, the only teaching hospital facility we have, along with Tulane in the state. And the VA, that was supposed to be a joint venture, which is good for New Orleans. It's good for the vets. It's good for the underprivileged and the people that need medical attention. But we are not going to let this hospital get away. We'll get it up as early as we can. Secretary Levine, who's the new secretary with the state of Louisiana Department of Health and Hospitals, said he's wanting to review the process that was done, the study that was done during the previous administration. So that's another 2 months just there in reviewing something that's already been studied and we thought was resolved. But with that said, I know there are VA clinics, and I'm not sure what the closest one to you is, but you know, if you have any needs or problems, call that our office number, 866-289-9210, and then someone in my office on my staff down in Louisiana can maybe help you or guide you to a facility, although I would assume that they're getting you to the closest clinic from where you live.
Thank you. Okay, our next question is from Marilyn in New Iberia. All right. Marilyn, would you like to ask the Congressman your question?
Good evening, Congressman.
Hi, Marilyn. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good.
My question, Congressman, is concerning the stimulus package, the money that's supposed to be sent or whatever or
right.
to families. Is this going to be an item that we're going to have to claim on income tax at the end of the year? And if so, could we just send the return the check without signing it?
I remember that time that the government did the stimulus package, and then we had to go back and pay income tax on it. I'm sure that's what you remember that too. We got that part right this time. It will not be taxable income. You will not have to pay any taxes on it. When we first started, you may not have been there. If you earn $3,000 or more, filed an income tax return for this year, you will be eligible. The checks are supposed to start coming out around the 1st of June, if not by the 1st of June. And so hopefully you'll be seeing your money in early summer.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Our next question is about coastal restoration, and it's from Craig in New Iberia. Craig, would you like to ask your question?
Yes, thank you. I want to thank you for hosting this. I've never been a part of anything like this, and I think it's really good.
Thank you.
What is being done for the coastal restoration around the Iberia, St. Mary, of a main area. I was just out in a boat this weekend running through a couple of bayous that I hadn't been in years, and I could hardly navigate my way through them because they had changed so much from the hurricanes. And I was wondering what was being done to not only restore them, to not only preserve what we have left, but actually to restore what we have. And shouldn't you think that, maybe reflect on what one of the other callers said, being these oil companies are you know, dredging these channels so they get this equipment in and out of these ports in Louisiana, are they footing some of the bill for coastal restoration? And if they are not, should they be footing the bill? And I have another question. Why don't you answer that one?
Terry, first of all, and when I ran for office, I was asked a question at a public forum of whether I would fund rebuilding coastal Barrier Islands first or start doing coastal wetlands projects. And my comment to him, my job is to get the money. The state has a plan for rebuilding the coastal areas, revitalizing the coastal marshes. The monies will start to come. We have passed the WERDA bill for the first time in 7 years this past year. The new Congress just bowed up and said, we've got to do it, in spite of the fact that the administration was not really, matter of fact, they vetoed it. We had to override the veto. So we've got a WERDA bill, which now provides the authorization for projects that were in the pipeline 7 years ago coming forward to begin. Louisiana coastal area is made up, we've got right now, I think, about $1 billion for system-wide restoration through CIAP, which is Coastal Impact Assistance. And the state teaming with the Corps, we've been having discussions with the Corps of Engineers about making beneficial use of the dredge material. In other words, go dredge those bayous and get them back opened again and use that material to rebuild the marshes. That's, you know, with the environmental laws, there's some certain hurdles to get over, but they're inclined to do those things. We just hope that we can get them to agree to do them quickly and then find the money to get that accomplished. We passed a out-of-continental shelf bill for oil and gas drilling for the first time in the history of the state. Will provide monies as royalty on the finds offshore, gas and natural gas and oil. The only problem is it's probably going to be about 5 to 10 years before we start seeing any significant amounts of money. However, there was a lease sale this past last month, and the state, I believe, will see about $3 billion, if I remember correctly, from that. So we will hopefully start having some monies that you can start seeing the benefits, you know, from the offshore oil and gas drilling, and those ports that are building those decks, that are sending those decks out into the Gulf, or what are going to produce the oil and gas that will give us royalty monies that we need to take care or to hopefully fix our coastal areas. One of the things, I'm a new grandpa by almost 2 years, and I've come to the realization that I'd like to leave this this country and Louisiana in better shape than what I found it. And so I will be working and stay on top of the issues of getting monies for the rebuilding of our coastal areas and fixing the problems that were caused by these hurricanes.
All right. My second question has to deal with the farmers. They don't pay a tax on their diesel fuel. And around here, a lot of tractors, you know, get on the roads, and it tears them up pretty good, especially where I live in Iberia Parish. There's a lot of sugarcane industry. And, I mean, I have nothing against farmers. I'm all for the old way of life, the old lifestyle of, you know, farming. Where does the money come from to repair these roads? And shouldn't the farmers pay something, or do they? I don't know. I just know they don't pay a tax.
Farmers may not pay in the diesel fuel because most of the use of the tractors, some farmers never put a tractor on the road other than to cross it. But there's a highway trust fund. The money from the federal government goes to the state. Now, the use of off-road vehicles on public highways, there are laws, but those are state laws. The monies that are spent for repairs of the highways while there's a federal state match. The State Department of Transportation, under the direction of the governor and the legislature, determine what the laws are, where the money's spent, and who can and cannot use those highways. So the use of the roads and the taxes that are paid, there are more state tax dollars that are not paid by exemptions, and the commercial fishermen have the exemption, farmers have the exemption, because their equipment technically is not for road use, and there may be some other exemptions. I don't recall them from when I was in the state legislature, but I know those are two. But I'd talk to your state legislator about that issue if there's a concern there for you.
All right, thank you for that. Our next caller is Nancy from New Iberia.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Nancy.
Good evening. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a nurse practitioner in Lorville,
okay.
Just outside of New Iberia.
I know exactly where Lorville is.
Well, good little town.
Yes, it is. Well, my sister used to live in Blue Haven. That's why I know that.
Excuse me?
I said my sister used to live in Blue Haven, so that's why I know that.
Oh. Okay, well, I live off of Dasput Road.
Okay.
I was born and raised here.
I know where that is.
At the end of February, Secretary Leavitt from the Health, the Department of Health and Human Services, they've put through a proposed change of what would how to designate health provider shortage areas and medically underserved populations. And as a nurse practitioner who owns and operates a rural health clinic, I'm really concerned because they've only given us a two-month window of time to give comments and feedback as to how what we think about this proposed rule of how they will change the designation of health provider shortage areas. And the Louisiana Rural Health Association has asked the different providers, along with the National Rural Health Association, to plead to Secretary Leavitt for an extension on how this, you know, so that this can be looked at closer by the different state departments of health and hospitals to see how it's going to impact the rural communities and the people who utilize rural health services. And I was just hoping that perhaps you could perhaps ask Secretary Leavitt to also look a little closer and to say that this 60-day period of time for comments is not sufficient. You know.
Yeah, we could, I will.
Grant for a 90-day extension.
I will. I can make that request, and that's not a problem. One of the frustrations we have, and we've talked several times, I've mentioned about the deficit that we inherited, at least I inherited when I got here, is affecting health care. When we're sitting, one of the issues that are a major concern of mine from the first day that I ran is affordability of health care and providing for working people and anybody that needs health care to be able to afford it and get good quality health care. What has happened in the last several years with administration proposals, they continue to want to cut the physicians' reimbursements, the pharmacists' reimbursements, the home health care reimbursements. They're making cuts in Medicare, and these are things that the majority party in the Congress is opposed to, and is trying to make sure, particularly in rural areas. My district is primarily rural. New Iberia is probably one of the largest cities, if you would, in my district. So that tells you the nature of the area I represent. And I come from Assumption Parish, and we, like everyone else, are concerned because of the rural communities. We have some legislation that I am a part of to try and encourage people that have gone to med school, gone to optometry school, gone to nursing school, that have had to take loans out to forgive parts of those loans if they'll come and practice in high-need rural areas. So we're trying to do the best we can with the limited resources, but instead of trying to provide so that people have preventative health care, and that's the cheaper way of providing health care, as you're aware, this administration appears to want to wait till people get real sick, and then the cost just really goes out of sight. So this Congress has spoken and will continue to speak, and I will see to it that Secretary Leavitt knows of your concern and support the extension to 90 days for comments.
All right, thank you for that. Our next question, this seems to be a popular topic tonight, so we'll just answer it real quick one more time about the WEP and the GPO. Let's see, we have a question about it from Carol in Napoleonville. Carol?
Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Carol.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Listen, thanks for all you do and have
done
and opportunity to voice our concern tonight. And I just want to repeat a concern previously mentioned a couple of times and know that you're going to give it your best just to please repeal the GPO and the WEP, which penalizes some public employees by cutting and taking away completely Social Security benefits that they and their spouses have earned. It's just such an unfair practice that it only affects some states and some state employees.
And I totally agree, and I will continue to do that. You know, one of the ironies is for all the years that I've worked, I was never in a public retirement system. And then when I got here, the first thing they do is sign you up for health care and retirement and these other things. And then all of a sudden one day when I started hearing the concerns of the teachers and the firemen and the other people that are affected by this offset, I realized that I may be in jeopardy also. I don't know that I am, but I believe that I could be because, you know, I have been, I haven't been a participant in the Louisiana system, which is one of the systems in several of the states that are affected. So Peachy wouldn't be happy if she couldn't get her fair share of any retirement that I've set aside or benefits. So you've got somebody that's watching me to make sure that I stay on top of this.
All right, thank you for that. Our next question is Laurel from Franklin, I'm sorry, and she has a question about FISA. Laurel, go ahead.
Hello, Congressman.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
I'm fine, Shea. Thank you. And thank you for including me in the call.
You're quite welcome.
My questions are about the Terrorist Surveillance Act.
Okay.
Have you all brought it up in the Congress?
Oh, it's been brought up on numerous occasions. As a matter of fact, I have voted for this. I have voted for the Senate version. I have voted for the House versions. And I say versions. I think I have voted for four FISA bills, Senate and House versions, and we have not been able to get one. The President either vetoes it or the Senate won't agree on the bill when it goes to conference committee. One of the frustrations is that we need to get this done. We have until August of this year, but we've had several attempts at it, and there's no one person to blame. There's different factions that want it their way or no way, and that's where the problem arises. So I would venture to say that before the August deadline gets here, that the legislation will be worked out and that we will have a legislation or we may have to do an extension. But whatever the case, this country will not be without its intelligence people being able to do the job they need to do. And in spite of some people saying they can't do it, believe me, they can do it. It's there. They've got all the abilities they've had. We want to just make sure that there's not eavesdropping that's taking place on average citizens because the law opens it up that wide. But the bills that have been passed, I think, are all been good bills, and we'll continue to try and get one passed that the President will sign.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for participating tonight. Unfortunately, that is the last call we're going to be able to take tonight. But if you didn't get to ask your question, just stay on the line after we hang up. You'll be able to leave a voicemail, and we'll be able to try to get back to you over the next couple days.
I want to thank everyone that took the time to get on the phone and visit with us. I wish we could have the time to answer all the questions each time. But we'll continue to have these telephonic town hall meetings, and I think Robin will give you some information about how to get on our website and get information, to request information, and to keep so you can keep up with the things that we're doing. And when you have issues of concern, you can let us know so that I can try and address those as best I can. So thank you again for joining me tonight. I appreciate it very much, and it's an honor for me to serve the 3rd District and the people of the district.
Thank you, everyone. And just a reminder, if you have a question, you can call Congressman Lawson's New Iberia office at 337-367-8231. Thank you again. You can also call the D.C. office at 202-225-4031. If you didn't get a chance to ask your call tonight, please stay on the line, and you'll have the opportunity to leave a voicemail, and we'll try to get back to you. Thank you, everyone, again.